All right, guys, welcome back to Small Talk. Now, for those who don't know what Small Talk is a segment under Den of Truth where we invite guests to talk about financial literacy, business, startups, politics, economics, social issues, a whole bunch of information that is going to give you some practical steps that you can take ownership in your life. And, you know, the whole aim of this is, we want to expose young people all across communities to, you know, be exposed to new information that's going to inspire you guys to take practical steps, take some accountability, some ownership, and hopefully, you know, inspire the next generation to become leaders, and you know, they pass down that knowledge to their kids as well and just create a better society. So recently, I've read a statistic that really surprised me, right? And it's, you know, I'll read it out, is that Aussies waste 140,000 tons of hardware and just technology each year, and only 12% of it gets recycled. So, you know, that makes me think, you know, in an age of consumerism to overconsumption and wastage, what are you doing with your phones and your laptops? I mean, some of us, you know, buy phones every year. Some of us have laptops every year and we just renew it every 3 years or so. What are you doing? Is it just sitting on your desk collecting dust? Is it you're just chucking it in a bin, or, you know, are you not recycling it? And we feel like it makes me think, you know, what can we actually do, or, you know, what can be done better? Because there's a lot of people out there who need technology, right, in underprivileged communities. And today we have someone that has established a startup that addresses this issue and is driving a positive impact for you know, a lot of communities to have equitable access to these, you know, to this technology, and that's driving a positive impact. And, you know, he's not only not defined by that one startup, he's also doing another startup on top of that. He's someone that has left a 9-to-5 and has done his own thing. He's the co-founder and CEO of Zolo, and he's also the chief marketing officer of a startup called OJazz. Today we have Franz here, Sat. How you doing, my brother?
Good, man. Pleasure to be here.
Hey, excited. Appreciate you coming on. Now, I just want to get straight into it, man. You know, a lot of people who come from this community where we come from, where Southwest Sydney to similar communities all across Australia and the world, there's a lot of lack of information, right? Mm. There's a lot of lack of accessibility to things that we wouldn't have compared to peers outside of Totally. Where we come from. And, you know, listening to your journey, it's interesting. I've read about it, but I love if you can just introduce yourself. Hopefully I've done a good job about it.
That was a good intro, by the way. You made me look good.
So I think, you know, I want to hear from yourself. You know, can you introduce us about, you know, your background, your career, and, you know, how'd you come about to the stage that you're at now?
Yeah, of course. First of all, like I said, it's good to be here, you know, just to have a conversation around financial literacy, because I think that needs to be dialed up in terms of the youth and millennials and Gen Z, in terms of that needs to be very, that's an important topic to discuss and often neglected. So it's an honor to kind of shed some light and share somehow my experience when it comes to that. I suppose in terms of my background, I came from a 9-to-5 background, as you know. So I finished uni, I studied marketing. So I've always been passionate about marketing and communications, advertising, storytelling to be precise. And I started my career at Optus. So I was part of their marketing team for 5 years. Started in the retail marketing team. So that was like my first gig at Optus, fresh out of university. And and I was super fresh, you know, very naive, but there's always been this level of curiosity that I have. And I think that was critical in terms of my growth and progression within the business, is I was just curious. Like, I was never the smartest individual ever, you know, and I used to fear public speaking as well. In a corporate environment, that's a super important skill to have, because that's kind of how you can articulate your thoughts and whatever it may be. And that's how you get job done, is through communication. Yeah. And I suck at communicating. Like, I get stage fright when I speak to someone. So that was kind of like my first 2 years at Optus, is trying just to navigate my way through that and try to build my confidence. I think... I did all various marketing practices at Optus. So I did retail marketing, did digital marketing, brand, so on and so forth. So that's kind of how my journey began, in marketing at Optus. And yeah.
Nice, man. And we'll definitely get through. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you did that for a number of years, and then you moved to doing your own thing, right?
Yeah.
But before we even get to that, a lot of kids and a lot of people, you know, who are still in high school, who are trying to get to uni,
yes,
you know, they still are doing a Bachelor of Business, maybe Bachelor of Commerce or whatever,
yeah.
And you know, a lot of these people want to get into marketing, right?
Yeah.
So, before we get to the beyond the 9 to 5, you know, when we say retail marketing or digital marketing, you know, can you, you know, break down, I guess, what are some of the things that you're doing on a day-to-day basis at Optus? Because, you know, there could be someone who's trying to break into a corporate job right now.
Yeah,
that's the first step before they realize something else, right?
Yeah.
But what's, you know, if you can divulge a little bit into, you know, what marketing entails and what are some of the things you're doing, maybe that could give kids an idea of, you know, what could be possible as a career option as well.
Yeah, of course. So first of all, I did marketing in university because that was the easiest.
You're not good at maths.
That was the easiest degree to get into. I barely passed. I think I can't even remember what I got from my HSC.
Yep.
But marketing was like the easiest entry point to get a university degree.
Yep.
And let's just get that out of the way. I think in my first gig at Optus, it was retail marketing. So basically, Optus, they have 350 stores across the country. And if I don't know if you've been to an Optus store.
100%.
Yeah. So, you know, you have all the marketing materials in the store, all the collateral and stuff.
Yeah.
So basically, just pulling them together. Pretty much, I was the middleman between the store and also the agent, the creative agency that we work with, and also the product teams within Optus. So it's it's a collaborative approach to kind of deliver one deliverable, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So I was accountable for delivering campaigns within the retail space, and at the same time making sure that the offers and the products and the services of Optus are brought to life in a way that it will be received positively by customers.
Yeah.
So that's what what was the second question?
No, that was the question, man. It's just like, what does it entail?
Yeah.
Your role. So. If I was to summarize and put a very high level for kids out there, it's like basically understanding what is happening on the ground and what customers are saying, what
totally.
They're demanding,
yeah.
and identifying some market signals in which
you'll
create that content to make it more relevant on future campaigns and in-store experiences so that you increase consumer, basically increase consumption and sales.
Correct,
Yeah, but that's one career option that kids can take, you know, to get into marketing. But I'm more interested, man, like the fact that you went from a 9 to 5 and now you've transitioned to doing Zola as a startup, but also the fact that you're doing OJazz as well. But before we even get to that, it's like, how did you move from a 9 to 5 mindset to thinking, I want to do my own thing. I want to have some ownership.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned that you went through a sabbatical when we're talking offline. So walk us through the process of the mindset shifting from 9 to 5 to taking a sabbatical, how important that was to how do you find your purpose to think about those two things.
Yeah, I love how you mentioned purpose because that was like the core as to why I kind of took that leap of faith. So yeah, like I said, I was at Optus for 5 years, and within those 5 years, my priority was just climbing the corporate ladder to the point where I alienated everything and everyone. My focus was just to get that next promotion, which is a good and unhealthy behavior to have. I think it's a good thing because it taught me discipline. And I was able to say no. You know, I was in my early 20s during that time, and I never partied.
Yeah.
I never partied. I think I was 23, 24 when I first started my corporate career. And I think most people during, you know, when you're in your early 20s, I think they tend to go out, they tend to have fun, which isn't, I'm not condemning that, but I think my priority at that time was, I was so laser focused on climbing that ladder, and everything that has nothing to do with that, never had time for it. I did not make time for. I never dated in my early 20s just because it was a distraction.
Yeah.
That was just my priority, was to climb the ladder, get a promotion, whatever it takes. And I think that has some sort of a negative impact in terms of how other people perceive me within the organization, because I think I was a pleasure to work with, but I think I had different priorities. I just want to make sure that I get the credit. I can't believe I'm sharing this, but I just wanted to make sure that I get the credit, I get the recognition, and also I work on the high level campaigns. And I was fortunate because I worked on the Optus's kind of Super Bowl campaigns, and I think that's I'm very grateful for that because that gave me a lot of exposure to the executives within the business, and at the same time, it was good for my personal branding within the organization. So that was like my first four years at Optus. I was just grinding, and I was having fun doing it as well. You know, I think when you achieve something, when you set a goal and you achieved it, that was kind of become an obsession for me. So that was my first 4 years in the corporate world. And I suppose part of growth, everyone goes through it, part of growth and maturity is your perspective in life would change. And I think year four at Optus, that's when it started to, there must be something outside and way bigger than just selling phones. Basically, that's all we did. We just sold phones. So I kind of went through that journey, and I was unhappy. I went through depression as well, and I didn't know why I wasn't feeling well. I wasn't there. You know, I was unhappy. I was sad. Performance at work has declined. I was ticking boxes. I was just ticking boxes. You know, I wasn't going over and above. I think it was a big effort for me just to get out of bed. And I was out of character. You know, I used to be very excited, very enthusiastic about work, about performing. But yeah, year four to five, I was just lost motivation. And I think I didn't know what was happening. I was very unsure of what was happening. But long story short, I was going through this mental health journey that I wasn't aware of, because I think I grew up in a very conservative Filipino family where mental health wasn't taught. And I'm sure a lot of people can resonate with that, especially people in our generation where you just gotta man up, you know. That was kind of like my approach way back in the day, in my early 20s, not really back in the day, just a couple of years ago, early 29. We were taught just to man up, you know, just to man up and just move on, which is a good thing to kind of have, because it teaches you to persevere. But I think there's a level of bravery if you just put your hand up and just acknowledge that things are not okay. So I reached that point where I had to acknowledge that things that are not okay. And a friend of mine, I chatted with a friend of mine and explained to her what was happening. She referred me to a therapist. So, at first I was very reluctant. Again, growing up in a very conservative family, I was like, I'm not crazy. That's often the
stigma.
Exactly. Yeah. So when someone sees a therapist, it just shows that, oh, you're crazy. You have issues. It's true. You know, I was crazy and I had issues, but everyone goes through it. And I think we should do our part and embrace that. If we have flaws, issues, or craziness in us, I think that needs to be addressed. And at the same time, that needs to be acknowledged, because the only time you can actually break through off that is through acknowledging and working through it. So I'm very grateful for my friend who kind of shed some light when it comes to seeing a therapist as part of my mental health journey. So I ended up seeing one. And I think the reason why I was feeling that type of way, I was feeling terrible, actually, is because of my values. It started off with the value system. What I've discovered is growth at that time. Growth was the most important thing for me. I need to be in an environment where I'm growing. I need to be surrounded by people that push me to grow. I just need to make sure that I'm always growing, always getting better, development, so on and so forth. And the reason why I was feeling depressed is because I was no longer getting that in my 9-to-5 job.
Right.
Because I've kind of plateaued.
Yeah.
Where I wouldn't say I wasn't given opportunities. I kind of became a spoiled brat where I just expect to work on the high level campaigns.
Yeah.
And I'm not proud of that behavior actually, because I was quite arrogant about it too.
Yeah.
To the point that I rebelled. Rebelled meaning, you know, I was just ticking boxes and just going with the flow. And if I was working on a campaign that wasn't high level, I was like, I didn't care. Yeah. I can say that now. You can't fire me.
Yeah.
I left. That was kind of like the situation that I was in. I wasn't growing. Yeah. And now that I've identified that, okay, I know that in order for me to be happy, in order for my potential to be maximized, and in order for me to just live a comfortable life mentally, I need to make some tweaks in the environment that I'm in. So that was like a 12-month journey.
Yeah.
I didn't quit straight away. That was like in year 4 at Optus.
Yeah.
And then on the fifth year, this was 2020 during the lockdown, on the first iteration of the lockdown. that's when I realized that, okay, everything was just on hold. You know, the world, everyone stopped. And it kind of changed my perspective in life in terms of what's really important. You know, you see these people who've lost their livelihood because of COVID. And for us, I was, you know, we had the luxury to work from home and at the same time get compensated for doing so. And I think that the first lockdown kind of, the time that I had to myself in terms of just self-reflection made me realize that I got to do something about this.
Yeah.
I think something needs to change because I was really unhappy. I was feeling very unfulfilled in what I'm doing. Suicidal thoughts were there too. Not that I was actually going to do it, but I think it's oftentimes we kind of just think about it,
yeah.
You know, because of the situation that we're in, whatever situation you guys are in. And it all stemmed from being unhappy, discontent. So long story short, I made a decision. Prior to making a decision, pulled out a spreadsheet, make sure that I can afford having no revenue stream.
Yeah.
And I had like 6 months to survive of not having income coming in.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh shit, I can live off my savings for 6 months, but I have to be very disciplined. You know, I can't go out for dinners and lunches, so on and so forth. So I did my homework. So if someone's watching this interview and thinking of resigning your 9-to-5 job, I think you have to do your homework first in terms of making sure that you can
survive
afford,
for 6 months.
You can survive for X amount of months.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the first thing that I did. Otherwise, I would have stayed, you know.
No, 100%. I feel like it's really important. And thanks for sharing that, man. Mm. I feel like it's important that we talk about mental health.
Yes.
Especially where we come from, like you mentioned before, man.
Yeah.
Even just the cultural aspect of it where, you know, where we come from in Western Sydney or so, it's just a stigma attached to even expressing yourself because you got to man up.
Totally.
To the fact that, you know, even reinforced by an Asian culture where we don't even talk about mental health because that's stigmatized on top of that as well. It makes it really hard for you to even express your emotions, right?
And
I feel like a lot of people where we come from in our culture, they were just traumatized, man.
Yeah.
It's the fact that we experience trauma, we've seen things that we shouldn't see, or just the fact that we haven't expressed it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just don't know how to even just share that to someone so that it heals.
Yes.
And I'm glad that, you know, that we're talking about where, you know, it shouldn't be a stigma. It should be a thing where you're able to talk to someone about it because that's how you work through things. And that's how I assume that led you to identify with your therapist that it's from a cultural value perspective, right?
Totally.
I need to have values that align to the stage that I'm at in life.
Yes.
And if I don't align with it, I'm going to be unhappy.
Yes.
And that's kind of led you to the point where my 9-to-5 isn't giving me the support system I need, or it's not giving me the, I guess, the growth that I required. Yeah. So, you know, walking through that, you know, you set yourself up, obviously, very good practical advice is that you got to have a 6-month emergency fund.
Yeah, at least 6 months.
At least 6 months, to survive if you quit your job. Yeah. And then, you know, walk me through, I guess, how did you recalibrate, you know, what sort of value, you know, growth is a big thing, right?
But,
you know, what were the pillars of growth that you were looking for? And how did you figure out your purpose, which has led you to, Zerlo and also OJazz?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think growth, to your point, growth is super important for me. And as part of growth, there's like a complementary component that is important for me as well, and that's autonomy.
Yeah.
Right? Unfortunately, if you're working in a 9-to-5 environment, you kind of don't have autonomy because you gotta check this person, you gotta check that person. It's a whole new operation. So I think autonomy for me was important, and I've identified that. And I think before I was kind of avoiding that it's important for me because it shows that I'm not a team player.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I made the bold and brave decision where, all right, I just gotta, this is where I want to be in life, right?
Yep.
What do I need to accept? What are the things that I need to get rid of in order to kind of break through and achieve the goals? And one of them is really accepting that autonomy is super important for me. But I just don't want to make sometimes autonomy has a negative connotation behind it because it shows that you're a control freak.
Yeah.
But I think being, you know, having the desire to do something where you have 100% autonomy just shows that, you know, you really care about what you are doing.
Mm.
It's not a reflection of selfishness or whatnot. I think it just shows a level of care.
You want to have control in your life. You want to have ownership in your life.
Yeah, you want to dictate how you want to live your life, you know, and how you want to progress career-wise as well. I think oftentimes, in the 9-to-5 industry where they always tell us that, oh, you are the future. You're going to be the future, right? And I'm always a kind of against that because why do I need to wait tomorrow to go after my dream job, to pursue my dreams, to take that leap of faith? So I think, and I'm sure, you know, people in younger people, often they hear that all the time where they say, oh, you are the future. At first it feels good. I was like, wow, I'm going to be the future, blah, 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 blah. But it's actually a dangerous mindset to have because it prevents you from going after the dream job.
Yeah.
Taking that leap of faith, starting your own business, because you'll always have on the back of your mind, you'll just be like, I'm the future anyway.
Mm.
But I think that's a dangerous place to be in.
It's a trap, but they kind of sell you the dream where you know, you are the future. You're contributing to the future of this company.
Yes.
And you're going to play a big role in this.
Hey,
man, like, you got to separate yourself from the job. And if your values align to that job, then cool. But if your values don't align to that and you're just there and they're selling you this dream, you got to take a step back and realize, man, is it actually what I want to do?
Totally.
And I feel like, man, look, you took a little break, a little sabbatical, you know, did your own thing. And I love to hear, man, like the fact that, you know, you quit your job. You did a little bit of yoga as you discussed. And then you took some time to obviously think and recalibrate. What led you to Zerlo? Like, you know, how did you come about, you know, this is my purpose? Was it something you just kind of saw there's a market for this,
right?
And it aligns to my growth?
Yeah.
When we talk about purpose, how did you,
I think all of the above. But I think how Zerlo came to life, so I co-founded it with a friend of mine, childhood friend of mine.
Yeah.
We used to work at Krispy Kreme selling donuts
together.
That's how we met. And, you know, he's like a brother to me. He's always going to be brother first, business partner second.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in terms of my journey, I left because I was looking for my purpose. I was looking for my why. And I think I've always been passionate about empowering the next generation, and passionate about, you know, providing kids the proper tools that they need to be able to break through so that they don't go through what I went through in terms of going through that journey of depression and unhappiness. So that was the big contributor when it comes to that. And then my business partner, Ryan, he just became a father at that time. And his kind of his viewpoint in life has changed as well. You know, he's been very successful. He's a successful entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So he's operated a couple of tech support and repair shops in Sydney. So he had one in Chatswood, Chippendale, North Sydney.
Yeah.
And then when he had kids, his perspective changed in terms of there has to be more than just making money. So we're kind of in the same space in terms of we want to do more in terms of just ticking boxes and paying the bills. Don't get me wrong, though. It's important to do those things. But we, I think we truly believe that you can still do those things at the same time, create a fundamental impact to society,
yeah.
Which is what we're all about. So, we just sat down and we combined our expertise. You know, I came from a marketing and advertising background, and he's got a very strong IT background. And we identified the gap for e-waste mm-hmm. from a business standpoint. They have plenty of unused tech just sitting in their storage rooms, and from a consumer individual standpoint, there's over 20 million unused tech sitting in Australian homes.
Yeah.
So how Zolo started is literally we just ran a campaign on Facebook. I'm going to be very tactical. We ran a campaign on Facebook,
yeah.
encouraging Australians to declutter for good. It's probably not the most commercially viable thing to do, where we literally went to every single household in Sydney and collected like phones, laptops. We were at a loss from a cash standpoint on that. But the reason why we did that is we just wanted to test a proof of concept.
To see if there's a market.
To see if there's a market, if it's going to be receptive. And it was received well. And then once we've kind of gathered all the data and the insights and the learnings, we've transformed Zolo as more of a B2B mm-hmm. business. So we purely focus on helping and empowering businesses, mm-hmm. providing them a solution to get rid of their old tech, recycle them,
yep.
Prevent them from going to landfill. And at the same time, they have the opportunity to contribute towards our social impact mission, which is to connect laptops and technology to kids and communities in need. Mm. So that's how it all came to life, I guess. It started with just having the desire to do good to society. I know it sounds really cliche, but I think that was like the core as to why we did it in the first place.
Yeah. And I think it comes from experiences, man. Mm. Like, you know, it's always hard when you think about, you know, how do I find my purpose? You know, what steps do you take? It's really, it's about what have you experienced in life?
Yeah.
What is it that you like? What is it you don't like?
Yeah.
What are you passionate about? And taking a step back and saying, at this stage of my life, does it align with what I want to do?
Yeah.
If it doesn't, then I need to take some steps towards it.
Totally.
I think that's the most practical thing we can do, right? When finding our purpose.
Yeah. And I think what helped, sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
And I think what helped as well was just allowing things to happen.
Mm.
Just literally just being there. Because oftentimes when we experience adversity, we avoid it.
Yeah.
We resist. There's a lot of tension. But I think what I've learned personally throughout the journey that I was in is I just welcomed all the
yes to things, man.
Yes, yeah. I welcome, you know, even if I was having a bad day and, you know, I wasn't myself,
mm-hmm.
I just sat there and just articulated, all right, why am I feeling this way? So I think you have to be vulnerable and you just have to surrender to what is, to whatever is being thrown at you, emotionally, physically, whatever it may be, and not resist from it at all, because those are like the little pockets of lessons that you kind of need to acknowledge.
It's opportunity
learn.
As well.
Yes.
It's opportunity.
So through those adversity and obstacles that I was in, I was able to kind of think about what's really important for me. Mm. It's been an ongoing journey. I'm not saying that I've kind of figured it out now. You know, I'm still in that journey, and that's the beauty of life that we live in. We face different obstacles, and those obstacles just allow us to become better versions of ourselves.
100%. I feel like that's saying yes to things is very important because it opens doors, man.
Totally.
It opens doors to people you've never spoken to, opens to tasks that you haven't done, and it'll give you a new perspective on life, but also spark some sort of idea in your brain, right? Like, sometimes you say yes, it won't spark anything, but that one point where it does, that's something like, oh shit, that's a business idea. Or that's something that I can do, I really like doing, right? Yeah. And I can tap into that. So interesting to say, man, like, saying yes to things opens pockets to opportunities. Mm. And just for Zolo, man, you know, e-waste is something that is just it's just wastage, and it's just things that are just going that is not being recycled and, you know, given to communities that need it. And I'm, you know, we're glad that, you know, Zolo is on a mission to do that, recycle, provide, you know, access for communities that don't have that. So, you know, two-part question is, one, you know, what contributes to the cycle of social disadvantage, because that's obviously what Zolo is trying to solve, and two, what areas or what communities is Zolo currently covering right now?
Yeah, totally. I think the first question is just opportunity, right? I think there's an opportunity to kind of promote having equal opportunity, whatever it may be, because I truly believe that everyone is capable, regardless of your race, background, wherever you came from. Everyone is capable of doing something great. But the barrier is always going to be opportunity. Opportunity could be not having the tools. Mm-hmm. Opportunity could be not being in an environment where they have a lot of people empowering them, right? So those are like the little pockets of opportunities that are not, unfortunately, not everyone has it. So I think it's just a matter of doing our part through technology, not saying that we provide opportunities full stop, you know? I think we
giving them access to the information.
Giving them access to information, because I think technology is always going to be the entry point. You know, online learning during COVID, everyone was heavily reliant on tech. And unfortunately, some communities in Sydney, there was a shortage in technology. I think in a household, two kids are sharing one laptop for online learning, which is very alarming. Mm-hmm. And that was actually one of the stats that that kind of pushed us. Oh, we have to do something about this. And I think just the notion of the digital divide that we experience. Is something that we want to address. And we were confident that we can address it based on our capacity and expertise. So hence why we pursued it. So, yeah.
Interesting, man. And what sort of communities did you identify that had this lack of access to hardware? You know, which communities are those that you can't remember?
So we partnered with Women's and Girls Emergency Center. So they're our charity partner. They're based in Redfern. Mm-hmm. So basically, they provide homes to victims of domestic violence. So I specifically pursued that that charity because it's close to heart, and that's kind of like our approach as well with our partnerships, not just from a charity standpoint, but the businesses that we work with. I think it needs to be genuine for me personally, and something that Ryan and I are quite passionate about. So the reason why we kind of pursued the Women's and Girls Emergency Center, because I'm a product of female leadership. My dad passed away when I was 16, so I was literally raised by a single mom. And I came from an industry in marketing where it's heavily dominated by female leaders. All my managers were female. So, I'm a product of female leadership. And I'm very proud of that. And I think one of the things for me is I need to give back, you know, to those who kind of paved the way and invested time in me. So I specifically pursued them because what they're trying to do and their mission resonates with me completely. Those are the communities that we specifically focus on is through our charity partner.
Nice.
We don't do it ourselves. We're not the experts in community outreach. So we partner with the experts, I suppose.
Nice.
All
right. And, that's one startup, and that's a great thing that you're doing for positive social impact. Before we even get to OJazz, which is a whole nother beast that you're working on, right? To the consumers or to the audience that's listening to this, what can they do practically to help Zolo?
Just get the word out there, number one. I think, you know, just everyone has the capacity to somehow help. It doesn't necessarily need to be for Zolo. Mm-hmm. But I think from a Zolo standpoint, it's just being conscious of how we consume.
Yeah.
Being conscious of how we consume technology, how we, you know, I think we're in a day and age where we have to get the latest every single time. And it's just a matter of having a level of awareness and consciousness around implications of getting new stuff. Mm-hmm. Not being an advocate of, and I'm not judging people who get the new phone every single year.
Just recycle, you know, after that, though.
Just donate it to Zolo. Yeah. just being conscious and aware. And I think that's what we can do. That's the part that matters, is just having a level of awareness and consciousness.
Awesome.
Yeah,
man. So look, for people who are listening, if you're a consumer, you're getting a new phone and getting a new laptop, make sure you visit Zolo. Donate as much as you can. These guys are doing great work for society and just communities as well. And if you're a business, definitely reach out to them as well. If a lot of you guys in procurement and IT definitely have a lot of just laptops and hardware just sitting there. So reach out to Zolo and just partner with them. And these guys, recycle and contribute to society as well. So, hopefully that's going to drive
some
traffic.
Thank you. We'll check out Google Analytics.
Yeah. Yeah, man, but that's a good thing. Now, OJazz, now this is something that is really interesting, right?
Yeah.
First off, jazz music.
Yes.
Is something that is, a lot of kids from where we come from probably don't listen to jazz, and there's a little pockets of it, but I think jazz is a genre within itself where it's great to diversify your music tastes. Mm. Now, there's a lot of artists out there that require help in the terms that, we're moving towards a time where independence and having ownership in your music and your art is such a big thing, right?
Yeah.
So can you explain what OJazz is as a business, what your role is there, and just tell us about the mission of that?
Yeah, totally. We'd love to. OJazz is a streaming platform for live jazz music. It's basically like Netflix for jazz. We deliver over 200 shows per year from the iconic clubs all over the world, and you can stream it on your phone, your laptop, TV, whatever it may be, wherever you want and whenever you are. So we partner with clubs in New York, London, Spain, Australia. We have two in Australia. And we kind of live stream and the shows directly from those clubs. So it gives the consumers the opportunity to consume the different cultural influences of jazz, and at the same time travel the world of jazz. That's one of our marketing components. Is we're more than just a streaming platform. We actually provide the culture. We bring to life the culture, the influences, and also the artists as well. Because I think what I've learned throughout this journey is there are different pockets of influences of jazz, and the music that we are listening to right now, the mainstream music like the Kanye's of the world, all influenced by jazz. Mm-hmm. And the beauty behind it is you get to see the grassroots of where it all began, and what I'm most excited about, and the reason why I jumped into this venture, is because of the mission of the company. So I mentioned earlier that we are more than a streaming app, because we believe that we are. So we provide a platform of opportunity where we create a stage for artists to thrive and grow. So what that means is the 35% of what we make will be connected to artists, clubs, and performers, giving them a whole new revenue stream for them to be able to hone in and really pursue the craft that they're in. I think one thing that I've learned is, I think I was never a jazz fan. Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of my level of knowledge in the arts and music industry, I would say it was a sound knowledge, but now working on it, I'm kind of into the detail now. But before, I think when someone says musician, I would always think of the mainstream artist, yeah, like yeah. Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber. But I think it's a whole new industry in terms of there are a lot of people that just want to make it. Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity to listen to their stories, to get to know them, and I've learned a lot from them. So these are your musicians that, you know, they play at a club on a Saturday and they work at a cafe on weekdays.
Yeah.
And, you know, they do that because just to get by, but their passion is to perform, right? We cater to those people, to those artists. We want to make sure that we position them to succeed. Part of the onboarding process when we have a show is I get to have the opportunity to get to talk to the artist. And I think one of the things that we want to do is we want to empower them to be able to promote themselves as artists, because I think that's one thing that's lacking at the moment, based on our experience, is they have the talent, they can perform, they have the passion, but in terms of just promoting themselves, that's one thing, that's a huge opportunity for us to tap into in terms of helping them. So those are one of the things that I'm kind of excited about. In terms of my role, so I have the honor of being the chief marketing officer for O-Jazz. And essentially my responsibility is just to drive awareness of, you know, the mission, who we are and what we're trying to do,
yeah.
Get people to buy into and subscribe, and just create a community of individuals that just want to empower one another. You don't need to be a jazz fan, yeah, to be a part of the community. I think the message that we are trying to portray is, number one, we have to appreciate art. The value of art. I think for me, I was guilty of this where I would just automatically assume that music, art should be for free, just because we're kind of accustomed to that. And how we consume media nowadays is it's on our fingertips, you know. Yeah. But I was, I think I had to go through this awareness component where they put in a lot of work to deliver just one product. And it's similar to business. You know, they deliver something for this one, it's art. So I think that was a good learning for me in terms of just appreciating the integrity behind
the process
yeah, and the creativity. I think I'm glad that I'm more aware of that, and I appreciate it. I think it's a whole new consumer behavior exercise that needs to change as well,
yeah,
in terms of how your day-to-day consumers, how they perceive art, how they perceive music, whatever it may be. I think the value needs to be front, right, and center.
Yeah. All right, and I think O-Jazz's mission is obviously empowering artists, specifically jazz artists, to be promoted and be recognized for their work, and also adding them a revenue stream that they can obviously be rewarded for the work that they put in, right?
Yes.
Now, can you tell us more about, obviously that's helping, it's a two market where you got one, which is the artist, and you're empowering their side.
Yeah.
Now, for a venue, right?
What
sort of value do you want to communicate to these venues? How is that going to help them bring an artist over?
Yeah.
Having a live stream, what does that do for their business? What's the business model looking like?
Yeah, totally. Right. I think I love working with the clubs because I get to experience different culture. There's plenty of diversity, which is awesome. So it's good. So I think what we do for the clubs is we work with a club in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. Someone in Barcelona can see all that.
Yeah.
The experience. So it's good from a tourism standpoint where, oh my goodness, this is the culture of Tokyo. These are the influences of Tokyo from a jazz perspective. So I think part of our production execution is we bring those little pockets of Tokyo to life. Mm. So it's not just, a live stream of music. We tap into the culture. We tap into the audience. It's a feeling as if you're sitting in a club in Tokyo, but you're in Sydney. So I think that's one of the things that we want to kind of encourage as well, is to, number one, help the clubs to get more people coming into the clubs, and raising awareness of who they are, what they're trying to achieve. Because I think at the moment for them, the most important thing is just foot traffic. And that's something that we're, where we can help, because number one, we provide the awareness through our platform, through our community. And it allows international eyeballs to, you know, to be a part of it as well. They can see what's happening in Tokyo. They can see what's happening in Sydney if you're in Tokyo. So it's something that I'm still kind of figuring out in terms of what's the best way to execute it. I suppose the beauty in startups is we're very lean. I may be the CMO, but I do all the stuff.
Yeah, you're wearing all the hats, man. Yeah. That's part of startup life, man.
So I think... I think for me, it's just how can I maximize that, what I just said, in terms of the bartender working in Tokyo, who's very flamboyant and entertaining.
Yeah.
How can we bring that to life in a way that's going to get awareness and traction from someone watching in Spain? Just bringing to life the different cultures.
Just connecting different parts of the world to
each other,
right? Yeah. So I think, if we summarize... the values, for artists is the fact that, you're being empowered, you have another revenue stream, you're being recognized for your work that you put in. And for the venues, you're bringing traffic, you're bringing recognition, and just, free press to these guys where, if I was to go in Turkey, I would know that there's a venue out there that plays jazz, right? I can go there. So that's awesome, man. I feel like, going to more of a personal view as well, where... I mean, your Instagram caption was something that struck out to me, where it says the school system is outdated. Now, I got a lot of views on school system of how it can be done better, but I'd love to get from your perspective, man. What do you mean by that when you say the school system is outdated? What's wrong with it? How's it broken?
First of all, that topic is like a passion point of mine, and I can go all day just talking about it. And I believe it's outdated. And there's a huge opportunity to kind of reinvent the school system. And I think it starts with truly understanding the students, right? Because not everyone's the same. I think the beauty behind life is, we get to share it with one another. We get to grow together. But at the same time, France is different from Tommy, right? In terms of, but the school system is a blanket approach where, all right, start year 7, work your way up to year 12. You got to make sure you get a high ATAR to get into uni. And then once you get into uni, you got to get an internship and then get out of that internship and get a full-time job. So that's like the blanket approach from the moment you step foot into a school. That's kind of like the milestones that you need to hit, which is great because you have a view of, all right, this is what I need to do. But what if that person... based on, maybe just based on how that student grew up, his personality, how is, just who he is as an individual, who he or she is as an individual, is not equipped for the typical approach where you have to get a high ATAR, get into university, get an internship, and then get out of an internship
it's
and
like
get a full-time
formula,
role.
Like just like you're templatizing the whole thing.
Exactly.
You're templatizing
and,
the kid.
And it prevents students from actually breaking through. And I think the reason why I'm super passionate about it, because I didn't do well at school. And that kind of gave... And I think that's when all the mental health issues that I went through, it all stemmed from that because I wasn't confident about myself. And the fact that I was getting mediocre grades, and I felt, I just felt like I was very incompetent, and I've lost confidence during my school days. I just wanted to play basketball, just wanted to play basketball, go home, go back to school, play basketball. So that was it for me. But apparently, you gotta get high marks. But I do understand the notion of striving to get high marks because it teaches you discipline. But I never understood why I have to get high marks. So I think in terms of why it's outdated, I think it needs to cater to a kid who wants to be an entrepreneur. it also needs to raise awareness around what happens outside the real world as well. One of the things that I struggled with when I, you know, my first day at the real world was how to budget, how to deal with different personalities, having empathy. So those skills that you need every single day, they never taught that to me at school. I had to learn that the hard way. You know, I learned that when I was 25, how to budget, how to deal with different personalities, how to communicate properly, how to listen. But I know how to do algebra.
Which is not applicable most of my life.
I know. So I think just those basic life skills, I think, needs to be dialed up. I don't know. Maybe they are doing that now. But, you know, just based from my experience, and I'm sure you can resonate with that too. There's just an opportunity to kind of inject more real life skills, providing options in terms of different pathways. And it's ultimately up to the kid to do whatever he or she wants to do.
Yeah, I feel like same as me, man. When I was in school, I had mediocre grades. I didn't really care too much about a lot of these topics. And I feel like you had to kind of had to find my own way of, of how to strive. So, 100% resonate with you there. Now, you're probably putting you on the spot here, but if you were let's say if you were, head of education or something, right? what reforms would you do, specifically? Any sort of idea, and, how would you, fix all your courses or whatever? What reforms would you make?
Okay. First of all, I think I don't have the capacity to become a head of education, but this is going to be just based on my experience and based on what I know. I'm not saying I'm an expert when it comes to education. It's just, I'm just reflecting on, oh, I wish I did that.
Yeah.
So on and so forth. So just to get that out of the way.
Yeah.
So I think freedom is the first thing. And when I say freedom, is giving the student an option to identify different pathways to whatever it is that they want to do. And how the school system can contribute towards that is just exposure, exposure to different pathways. You don't need to go to university. I know that could be very controversial. And sometimes you just need to learn life skills, what I mentioned before. So I think starting with that, and not being judged purely on grades.
Yeah.
Right? Because, I was getting mediocre grades, and I automatically assumed that I'm going to be I'm not going to go anywhere in life just because I didn't get full marks. So I think just positioning that, being able to articulate and identify if the student is getting mediocre grades or low grades, there should be a different kind of curriculum for those particular students. It's not a blanket approach, because I think it's a blanket approach at the moment where you're going to learn X, Y, Z, whatever, and if you get X, Y, Z results, you're still going to learn X, Y, Z. It shouldn't be X, Y, Z across the board. For someone, I think for someone who really excels, it's for them. And I'm jealous because it wasn't for me. And I kind of wish I understood that at a young age where this is, the school, getting high grades, getting a high HSE is what it should be. But I never understood the reason behind that, to be honest. But just giving an option to those who's kind of rebelling to the system, to the school system. Because I rebelled to the school system where I don't want to do my homework, sit at the back of the class, so on and so forth. Just giving them an option, because I think everyone has the opportunity to become great. And it's just a matter of instilling that and providing opportunities to kind of navigate through that journey of greatness, they say.
I think it's, having a standardized, it's hard because how do you scale customization or tailoring to kids as opposed to making it easy and standardizing, right? So 100% understand, the difficulty in that, but that is a gap that is outdated where, the more that we you know, every year passes by, I just see kids just rebelling. I see kids that just want to do their own thing, and they probably fall into paths that they don't want to fall into, or they don't see themselves into. So I 100% agree with you that there needs to be a system where you tailor to these kids. An interesting one is my girlfriend told me about this, is Montessori academies.
What's that?
Montessori academies. So these are schools that tailor to each of the kids. They let the kid, they test out the kids, I guess, their skills and their learning path. Yeah. And they realize, oh, shit, this kid's actually really good at basketball. Yeah. Oh, shit, this kid's really good at maths or English or arts. Yeah. And then they hone into that skill so that they really just become experts in that. Yeah. And, you know, that's driving passion. That's helping stuff, you know, create, be more creative within that space. So Montessori Academy is something that's interesting. I don't know how much it costs, but that's something definitely we should look into.
Yeah, I love how you mentioned that, though. It kind of unlocked an idea or an insight. Ultimately up to the parents at the end of the day.
Up to the parents.
Again, I mentioned earlier that I grew up in a very conservative household where the degree is like the holy grail.
Yeah.
And I think I was kind of, you know, I was stuck in that system. To this day, my mom doesn't understand what I do for work. To this day.
Yeah.
You know, she was worried when I quit my job because it's not normal. You know, I'm not working in 9 to 5. But I think, it starts with the parents, where you have to really know what your kid wants to do in life, what their personality is, and not get too confined on the system, right? Because I just wanted, I just wanted to play basketball. Could have made it to the NBA. Shooting, I could make corner threes, you know, if I just kept doing that. But I did it.
Yeah, I'm joking. My Montessori Academy would have helped you hit them corners. Look, I think almost wrapping up. I think in terms of practical steps, you know, because you're someone who came from a 9 to 5.
Yes.
You now established a startup, Zola, and also working in a startup as a CMO as well for OJazz, and you're wearing a lot of hats. Leaving the information out there for those who do want to have ownership and establish a startup, right?
Yeah.
First is obviously finding your passion and finding the market you actually want to do. But can you outline, if you were to start a startup from scratch, what would be the steps? What's the thought process you would share? What steps would you outline, and how do you set milestones?
Of course.
How would you do it practically?
Yeah, I think the first thing is before all the milestones would be environment. The environment that you're in is very important. So it's the people you associate yourself with, the people you hang out with, and the people you gain wisdom from. So that was like the first thing that I took in terms of, all right, I decluttered some people. I've lost a lot of friends. And I was fine with that because I had that level of awareness where I have one goal in mind, which is to become an entrepreneur. And I know the things that I need to do. And one of them is just making sure that I cultivate an environment where I'm thriving. So that's number one. The second thing is from a startup perspective is, what's the problem that you're trying to solve? I think oftentimes we are I was putting my hand up here. I just want to make money. And money is important because it unlocks opportunities. But I think in order for a startup or a business or for an individual to be successful is to identify what problem that you are solving and how can you make someone's life better. So that's the second one. And then I think the third one would be, I think we are in this world to have a level of impact, a positive impact to someone or something. It's just finding that, how can you create or contribute a fundamental impact to society based on the skills and expertise that you have? I think those are like the top three things that I've kind of considered. So environment, mentors are very important. The people you hang out with, you associate yourself with, and how you get wisdom. And then the second one is making sure that you solve a customer problem. Mm-hmm. And trying to fill in the gaps in terms of, if I solve X problem, it has a commercial benefit. Mm-hmm. So it's being able to kind of bring all those pieces together And then the last one is, what was the last one? I can't remember what the last one was. I think the last one was, I can't remember.
I think carrying on to that, man, I think it's obviously associating with the people that you want to align with, right?
Totally.
You want to align with, like, beyond just a friendship, but, like, if this person shares the same values as me, shares the same vision, because you have to be on the same page.
Yeah.
So finding the right people, because, I mean, even starting a startup, man, because you guys are going to be sharing equity.
Yeah.
You want someone who has the ownership mentality
totally,
with you and aligns with that vision. Two is finding a purpose and seeing whether there's a market for that as well, as you're passionate for that. And three is obviously, I think, proof of concept. You gotta you gotta test that idea out before
totally,
if it works, then you can
scale.
If it doesn't, then back to the drawing board.
Yeah, and I think just have fun throughout the process is very important. And having fun in the midst of pressure is very critical as well. And I think one of the things that I like about OJazz is that I'm applying all the stuff that I learned from Zolo.
Yeah.
And I think from Zolo, I was so stressed out because that was like my first rodeo. And then I've lost track of the little things, you know. And looking back at it, did I stress out on that, you know? And that's why my approach at OJazz is way different now in terms of I'm really enjoying it. And you can tell from the output. And it's also contagious as well. I'm conscious that I'm working with other people now for OJazz. And I think I see it as my responsibility to make sure that I lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
My action would influence other people's actions too.
Yep.
So I'm always mindful of that and making sure that, yes, it's a high pressure situation, but we're a bunch of creative individuals where sometimes creative people don't respond well to pressure and it impacts the output of the creativity. So it's just being empathetic and just kind of like being the Zen person at the same time getting stuff done.
Yeah, 100%.
I
feel like, it's if you guys all align the same vision and you face adversity, but you love what you do, then if you really love it and you're actually passionate about it, you're going to go through the adversity and you're going to get through it, right? And I think, what I was going to say, man, damn, I forgot. I think doing a startup, man, like even if you fail and the startup fails, it's the process that you're learning so that you know the next startup I'm going to do or the next business, if I try again, I know not to take that path. I know that this is the best practice. I know that
totally.
This is the people I should talk to.
Yeah.
So it's a process where you have to learn rather than the outcome. And that leads to the outcome, right?
And then I think one thing that might hit a nerve to some people is don't start a startup just so you can put it on your Instagram story.
There's a lot of people like that.
I used to be like that.
Yeah.
And I think as part of my growth and maturity journey, I guess, I was able to let go of that. Because I think before that was like the priority. I just wanted to prove other people wrong. You know, I was heavily putting everything on social media. But I feel like ever since I've kind of stopped doing that, that's where I've noticed results.
Yeah.
And I like literally do not care. I just care. Like I'm so laser focused on what, you know, the outcomes that we're trying to achieve, and also sticking to the company mission. You know, for OJazz is to empower individuals all over the world. Sticking to that. Oftentimes we lose track of the mission during the doing.
Yeah.
During the delivering of stuff, but it's good to kind of make sure that, all right, this is why we're doing it in the first place, to empower an artist in Tokyo to continue to perform. Let's stick to that despite the obstacles and the adversities, because that's why we did it in the first place.
Yeah, staying aligned to it before you do a startup, just be really aligned with what you want to do instead of just for the sake of doing a startup.
Yeah.
Right? All right, man, before we wrap up, I always ask this question.
Yes.
Three books that you would recommend to the audience that they can read on?
Love reading books, but just three?
Just three, just the title.
First one I just read this is Shoe Dog.
Shoe Dog.
By Phil Knight, Nike founder. I think that is a great articulation of like the journey of starting a business from scratch to where it is right now. That resonated well with me in terms of the early stages of, you know, Phil Knight when he was, you know, fresh out of university. And then he traveled the world, and he just wanted to challenge the system, right? So that that book really resonated well with me, and it gave me confidence as well to kind of know, oh shit, we're on the right track here, because journey is kind of similar. I'm not saying we're gonna be the next Nike, but in terms of just the growth and the journey and the perception, I think that ticks all the boxes. The second one is The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle. Hope I pronounced his name right. So that's just all about being present, being in the present moment. And I think, you know, for an entrepreneur, that's kind of important to thing to have is focus on the now, focus on the present time, surrender to it, and then just enjoy the journey. So that taught me how to be grounded and just be present, which is the most important thing, regardless if you're not an entrepreneur, I guess. And then the third one is Start With Why by Simon Sinek. I think marketers would heavily benefit from that book. I think it's a good sales book as well, because oftentimes we just tell them, this is what I do. But I think apparently the best, well, what I've learned from the book is the best approach is to start with why you're doing it in the first place, how you're doing it, and then what it is that you're actually doing. That's kind of like the formula in terms of, you know, for pitches. I did a lot of pitches for Zolo. We did some for O'Jazz, and that kind of book helped me just to be able to just structure what it is that we're trying to convey.
Yeah,
it's good for communicate. It's a good communication book to be able to articulate your thoughts in a way that's going to be effective, and it's going to resonate to your target audience. So Shoe Dog, Nike. The Nike book, Power of Now, and Start With Why.
Awesome.
They're my top three.
All right, guys. Well, look, I appreciate you for coming up and then sharing your insight. Hopefully that's been useful advice for the audience. And stay tuned. Like I said, Small Talk is going to be focusing on bringing this information and the guests that are relevant to these topics to help you become the next leaders of your generation and onwards. So appreciate you guys for jumping on, listening to us. And Franz, thanks for coming on. And
thank you.
See you next time, man.
See you, man.